Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
And God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Here's how twisted our tendency to use technology has become. As a speaker, I'm kind of hoping that you're at least somewhat focused on me. But it would also be fine with me if you wanted to tweet a little bit about what we're talking about here, because that has become a bit of an unspoken goal for speakers. So here I am doing a talk on how technology removes us from the present. Well, I'm simultaneously hoping that you'll remove yourself from the present for a few moments to send 140 characters about how technology removes us from the present.
Welcome to Q Ideas. I'm Gabe Lyons, and on the show today, what a great conversation we're going to have about technology and how it's affecting you, your children, and our relationships. How should Christians think about technology, these little devices in our hand, our computers and laptops, and how we're engaging with our children and our friends and our relationships? We all know that this is a challenge. It is a moment in our culture. It's a moment in our relationships where good thinking's required, where we need to be sober-minded about the effect that technology's having. And I can't wait for you to hear this talk. We commissioned this talk by Dr. Kara Powell. She's the executive director of the Fuller Youth Institute. And the name of the talk is called Numb Generations, because it really does describe what I think many of us are experiencing, that there's somewhat of a numbing out happening in our relationships. There's a natural turn towards technology as our way of expressing ourselves, or in some ways, removing ourselves from awkward social moments and environments by pulling out our phone, because that's the place we have more comfort. That's the place we may feel a little bit more in control. But this isn't just opinion. Science is starting to reveal this. Science is starting to play out a narrative where we're learning about how this is affecting us. And we must remember, we're in the middle of that experiment. We're kind of like the laboratory for how technology is affecting us, how it's remapping our brains, how it's affecting our relationships. And so today we're taking a deep dive. You're going to get to hear from an expert who has researched this, analyzed this, and considered, what does it mean for a Christian to think about this? What does it mean for human beings to think about this? And it's going to provoke, I think, a great conversation, not only for you, but for your family members, pull people together and say, what does this mean for us? I know for Rebecca and I and our family with three children, this is a constant conversation about technology. How are we managing it? Are we doing well? Are we not? How are we going to hold each other accountable? I'll talk more about some of the practical things we're trying to do in our family towards the conclusion of this. But I hope for now you'll sit back and enjoy the beginning of a talk by Dr. Kara Powell, who's written many books. Her most recent is called Growing Young, and it lays out six essential strategies for helping people understand a new generation. And I think you're going to understand as well, you're going to see Kara's heart for caring about a new generation. So let's listen in now to Dr. Kara Powell describe numb generations.
A pretty typical 21st century family living in South Korea. They met online, got married, and had a baby girl. But that's where the Kims' online Cinderella story ends. Their baby girl was born premature and cried almost constantly. Wanting an escape from their wailing infant, the Kims went online and adopted a virtual daughter. One day, while the Kims were at an online cafe, they returned home to a tragedy. While they were taking care of their online daughter, their real flesh and blood daughter had passed away. They were so busy nurturing their digital daughter that their human daughter died from malnutrition and dehydration. Now, I'm guessing knowing you know has been so sucked into technology that someone actually died. But I'm guessing you know plenty of folks who lose themselves in technology. I work with a fantastic team at the Fuller Youth Institute that studies teenagers. And let me tell you about a generation that eats and breathes technology. 58% of this generation own a desktop computer. 61% own a laptop. 18% own either a tablet or an e-reader. But the real king of technology, as you can guess, is the device in their pocket. 88% of this generation own a cell phone, and when asked to describe their cell phone in one word, they said awesome, great, good, love, excellent, convenient, useful. Now, you might think some of those words don't sound very adolescent, especially the words convenient and useful. That's because the generation I'm talking about isn't teenagers. I'm talking about adults. Are young people avid users of technology? You bet. But the best data suggests while young people may be digital natives, we adults are fast adapting digital immigrants. 83% of young people are on social media. So are 77% of their parents. The average young person interacts with the screen 11 hours a day. That's a lot. But for adults, it's 9 hours a day. So before we as adults judge teenagers for their fast texting thumbs and seemingly permanent earbuds, we need to be honest with ourselves. Because see, what you and I and the Kim family that I described and probably the nearest 16-year-old share in common are two things. Number one, we use a lot of technology. And number two, while technology is a blessing and helps us go deep and wide in relationships, like all good things, there's a dark side. And technology can cause us to become numb, to lose connection with our present environment, to lose touch with those most important to us, and even to lose touch with ourselves. Now, before you dismiss all parallels between us and the Kim family, please heed the words of William Saltan. William Saltan is the tech reporter from Slate magazine who covered the death of the Kim's daughter. Saltan writes, every time you answer your cell phone in traffic, squander hours on YouTube, text a colleague during dinner, or go to TV to escape, you're neglecting others around you. You're letting technology make other worlds even more compelling. Researchers have studied what happens to our brain when we use technology. And parts of our brain literally shut down or become numb to accommodate the new stimulation from the technology. Researchers studied this by asking a pretty simple question. Does a triangle have three sides? Now, I'm guessing all of us in this room can answer that question. Even the non-math fuzzy people can answer that question today. But then scientists put drivers in simulations where they pair driving maneuvers with talking on their phone, and they monitored brain activity. When drivers were turning left into oncoming traffic and answering really simple questions on their phone, like does a triangle have three sides, their brain activity shifted. They literally became numb to their environment. They became numb to other cars, and they became numb to pedestrians. Some folks concerned with this numbing are going on digital diets, short bursts of time where they refrain from using technology. Lori Leibovich from the Huffington Post describes a one-week vacation she took where she told her kids, if you see me doing anything on my iPhone other than taking pictures, take my phone away from me. Her kids were thrilled. But she described that going a week without technology created a bit of an existentialist crisis for her. But then once she settled in, she found it exhilarating to use her hands to build sandcastles instead of tap a screen. She writes hauntingly, for the first time in I don't know how long, I was really seeing my kids. And they were relishing being seen. Her technology had made her so numb that only when technology was removed could she actually see her kids. You see, this is why the phrase surfing the internet is so very appropriate. Because while technology is great in many ways, and in many ways brings depth, in other ways it causes us to skim over the surface of our relationships, experiences, and even our own feelings. Some true stories. A 17-year-old sleeps with a cell phone every night on her pillow. This is not unusual behavior for teenagers, by the way. She sleeps with a cell phone every night on her pillow. She's hoping to get that middle of the night text that shows her someone, anyone is thinking of her. Technology helps her cope with her ongoing loneliness. A widower every night as he's having dinner watches TV, watches the news. Technology helps him become a little bit numb to his pervasive grief. Parents who are so overwhelmed and frustrated by what's happening to their families go to Facebook for a bit of cheer. They become spin masters, distracted from the present by all the energy it takes to come up with clever Facebook-worthy posts. As one grandmother told me about her daughters, I see how my daughters are interacting with their kids, and then I see what they post on Facebook. What they post is nothing like what's really happening. Personally, technology helps me deal with my addiction to accomplishment. When I start to feel a little anxious, when I start to feel a little insecure, my ability to send a few texts or emails is like a warm blanket, a codependent, dysfunctional blanket. If you're like me, you've even sensed this tension with technology here at Q. On the one hand, I love how technology helps me keep in touch with you, and I've been texting about where we're going to meet for meals or breaks. I've been enjoying following the Twitter stream. But on the other hand, even that engagement with social media, not to mention the stream of emails that come from me from the outside world, have been a distraction to me here at Q. It was interesting sitting in the balcony this morning after the Brilliance led this wonderful music set. Mike, my whole row sat down, and guess what we did? We got out our cell phones, the entire row of us. Here's how twisted our tendency to use technology has become. As a speaker, I'm kind of hoping that you're at least somewhat focused on me. But it would also be fine with me if you wanted to tweet a little bit about what we're talking about here. Because that has become a bit of an unspoken goal for speakers. So here I am doing a talk on how technology removes us from the present. Well, I'm simultaneously hoping that you'll remove yourself from the present for a few moments to send 140 characters about how technology removes us from the present. As we think about how technology affects us across the generations, senior adults, adults, and young people, there's one phrase that comes to mind, numb and number. You have my permission to tweet that if you would like. Technology itself is boasting about how it helps us do so much at the same time. We're going to look at a current AT&T ad praising multitasking.
What's better, doing two things at once or just one?
Two.
You sure?
I am absolutely positive.
Two times is awesome. The thing I can do is wave my head and wave.
That's amazing. I've never seen anything like that.
Look, I can do
Hold on, I'm watching this.
I'm getting dizzy.
It's not complicated. Doing two things at once is better. And only AT&T's network lets you talk and surf on your iPhone 5.
So for kids and adults, it's considered valuable to talk and surf. So here I am ignoring my present to talk to you on the phone. But then I'm ignoring you on the phone so I can go online. Technology helps me become numb, like, exponentially to the second power.
Well, you may have thought the talk you're listening to right now by Dr. Kara Powell would have just been about the next generation or younger generation. But here at Q Ideas, you're hearing about how does this affect us? How is it affecting adults and the way we're relating not only to one another, to our spouses, but also how we're parenting, how we're thinking about our children. This is something very real for Rebecca and I. I know as adults, many times we don't recognize that we're the worst perpetrators. This wouldn't have been more clear to me than I remember taking our daughter, Kennedy. She was 8 years old, and we were walking around in New York City at the Met Museum. We were observing the beautiful statues and many of the exhibits, and we were walking down this one hall where there were several marble statues. And you can imagine a little 8-year-old kind of looking up at everything. And from her vantage point, she's just looking up. She's kind of maybe, you know, waist high on these statues. And some of them were up on pedestals, so they were up high. And I'll never forget, she looked at this one pedestal of a woman, looked to be probably 700 years old, this actual statue. And she was, as I could see it, she was holding out her hand and she had a cross in her hand. And the lady was looking down nicely at this cross, and it was kind of looked like a sacred moment that she was having and considering. Well, from Kennedy's perspective, our daughter, She was looking up, and all she could see was the back of a hand. And she looked at me and said, "Dad, is she looking at a phone?" And I just looked at Rebecca and said, "Oh my goodness, can you believe it?" Like, from her perspective, she's imagining this person must be looking at a phone, because all she's known her whole life is adults look at phones, and that's the view that she has. It's the back of a hand. How many times are our kids seeing just the back of a hand, and they're not seeing us? They're not connecting with us because we are so engrossed, and I'm so engrossed in trying to keep up or respond to people or send a text message and so on. And so it's convicting for all of us. And so as we move into the next portion of this talk, where I'll remind you here at Q Ideas, we're letting you hear some of our best talks from our annual Q conference, these 9 and 18 minute talks. And then we're having conversation about what does this mean for us? And so we're going to tune back in and listen to Kara Powell's conclusion to this talk about some practical ways you and I can start to adopt some new ways of managing technology and how we're going to think about it in our own families and in our own relationships. Let's listen back in.
The current cover of Atlantic Monthly magazine describes the touchscreen generation, meaning preschoolers. And it profiles parents of preschoolers who use passback technology, meaning they pass or they loan their iPads to their 3, 4, and 5-year-olds so their children can explore educational apps. Now, the exact educational merit of the apps has yet to be really proven, but it lessens our guilt as parents if our kids are learning letters and numbers and colors. As we think about how generation is extending younger and across the generations, we're going to need grander and faster technology. We're going to need more gadgets. One such gadget on the horizon is Google Glass. Google Glass is a pair of glasses that has a video screen embedded in it. And using this video screen, you can take pictures and videos, send texts and emails, all while going about your day-to-day business. The cost of Google Glass is $1,500, but it's expected to come down this year. I suggest that how you feel about Google Glass, and as I'm describing that, if that's something you want or abhor, is a bit of a litmus test for how you feel about technology reaching into your present. Now, while the main focus of this talk is on technology, there are interesting parallels in the world of psychiatric medicine. I have my PhD in practical theology, not neurology. But I know this, the brain is an organ. And like all organs, it often needs medicine to be corrected. Having said that, we need to reflect on when and why we use psychiatric medicines for all generations. 2 weeks ago, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention revealed some fairly alarming statistics. 1 in 5 teenage boys are now being diagnosed with ADHD, as are 11% of school-age children. 2/3 of those who are diagnosed also receive a prescription for medicine. Now, Edward Hollowell is a psychiatrist and faculty member at Harvard who agrees with me that there is a definite biological cause to ADHD. But he also suggests that there's an environmentally triggered cluster of syndromes that resembles ADHD called attention deficit trait. And here's what Hollowell from Harvard writes. Like the traffic jam, attention deficit trait is an artifact of modern life. As our minds fill with noise, feckless synaptic events signifying nothing, the brain gradually loses its capacity to attend fully and thoroughly to anything. Now let's look at that phrase, our minds filling with noise. Is it possible that the way technology fills our mind is at least in some way contributing to our cultural challenge in paying attention? Now, I need to clarify, I am pro-technology. I use it every day. I'm not calling for the elimination of technology, nor am I calling for us to boycott psychiatric medicine. I'm not even necessarily saying we should use less of either. But I want each of us to imagine at the end of our life when we're welcomed into the kingdom by our Savior. In the midst of all the wonderful things we're going to experience, we're ushered into our own media room. And in our individual media room, there's a comfortable couch, there's cozy blankets and pillows, there's all the Starbucks or Pete's if you prefer, all the Junior Mints and popcorn you could want for free and with no calories. And you're told in sitting in this media room that you're going to watch a video. The video is a compilation of all the moments in your life when you were fully present, fully attentive to what was happening, what you were feeling, and who you were with. In the midst of this talk on technology and how it can cause us to become numb, I want to ask you this question. How long is your video? How many scenes will there be of you relishing life to the fullest, not numb and not distracted? At least young people use technology to stay in touch with those in their relational core. We adults often use technology to stay in touch with those on our relational fringes. We use Instagram and Pinterest to stay in touch with those across the country and world and ignore those sitting across the table. Parents, please hear this. 28% of teenagers think their parents are addicted to their cell phones. 21% of teenagers wish their parents used their cell phones a lot less. I don't want my three kids' primary image of me to be with my head down on my phone or laptop. It's not just about how attentive we are to each other. What about how attentive, how available are we to God? As you think about this video at the end of your life, how many scenes will there be of you completely ready to hear what Jesus is trying to say to you, not numb, but fully alive? In Screwtape Letter, C.S. Lewis describes the strategy and tactics of Screwtape, a senior devil. Screwtape's whole job is to thwart the word of God. One day, one of the men he was assigned to was on the verge of a major spiritual breakthrough, a breakthrough that was 20 years in the making. Screwtape thought, I got to stop this. I know what I'll do. I'll distract him. So he planted a thought in the man's mind. After all, it was about time for lunch. So with lunch on the man's mind, he stood up, walked out of the room, walked out onto the street in search of a sandwich. The spiritual moment was lost. Now, regardless of your theology of demons, isn't it possible that technology is not only making us numb to each other in some ways, but also could be making us a little numb to God? Just as we're on the verge of our own spiritual breakthrough, we get that ping of a text or our phone rings and we feel like we have to take the call and the spiritual moment is lost. Earlier, I asked you to imagine this video at the end of your life and how long will it be when you're fully present? But let's zoom in a little closer. What about in April? Or how long will it even be today? You see, I love technology. I just don't want it to steal time from my video. So I'm changing my habits at home. One of the elements I love about my job at the Fuller Youth Institute is there's so much work I can do from home, and it's a flexible schedule for me as a mom. But that also means the tentacle of my job extends into my family. But now when my kids walk in the door, I shut the cover of my laptop. It tells them that they are more significant than me. And probably more importantly, it tells me that they are more significant than the work that I'm doing. I want my video to have so many scenes of me with my husband and kids. Too many to count. This past weekend, I accidentally left my cell phone in a hotel room in Philadelphia. Unless you be worried, the conference where I was speaking overnighted it to me. But it was an interesting experiment in not having my phone. At first, I was freaking out. My heart was pounding. My hands were sweating. And this weekend was really strange. Like, I had to print out directions. I used my home phone. I mean, how 90s is that? But I got to say, I was more present and attentive to my friends, family, and congregation when I wasn't worried about my phone. Parents, you might want to try what one family I know does, that when the parents and the teenagers walk in the door, they put all their phones in a basket in the living room. Even the friends' teenage children do that. Actually, the kids have come to like it because they're actually focused on who they're with. You might want to try what my brother does. When he goes out to eat, he and his friends and colleagues put all their phones on a stack in the center of the table. If anyone reaches for their phone before the bill comes, that person has to cover the entire tab. You can try that at lunch today. Maybe get a free meal out of this talk. So often, as was said yesterday, we in the church are known for what we're against. Let's be for something. Let's be for using technology and being present. I think we followers of Jesus across the generations can have the best, longest, and most exhilarating videos of all.
Well, I hope this has been encouraging to you. I know for me it's been convicting to hear those statistics that 28% of teens think their parents are addicted to their phones, 21% wish their parents used their phones a lot less. Let's face it, we need to do better at managing technology, not just for us, but so that our children grow up in a way where they understand presence and embodiment mean something. You know, we talk about these kinds of topics every year at our annual Q conference. I want to invite you to join us. If you're listening right now, mark it on your calendar, April 26 to 28. 2,000 of us come together in Nashville, Tennessee for the opportunity to hear amazing talks, over 30 talks, one of which is by Andy Crouch, a real thought leader in how faith can understand culture and how these two integrate. And he's specifically talking about how we can manage technology. So we'll continue this conversation with peers, with other leaders who are trying to figure this out for themselves. It's been a great show. It's gone too quick. I can't wait for next week. But in the meantime, go to qideas.org/radio, where you can actually sign up for our Q Weekly, which is where weekly on Monday we'll send you out a question of the week where we're going to explore topics like this and let you hear multiple perspectives, because our goal is that we as Christians would be some of the most curious people in the world, some of the most thoughtful, that we would think well, but that altogether that would lead us to advance good in the world. And so until next time, I hope you have a wonderful week, and we'll look forward to seeing you back next week for Q Ideas. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.